Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
It changes day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, but we're talking about the coronavirus, and there is a guy that loves sports, he loves medicine, and a doctor here in town that I appreciate, and that's Dr. Rick Lehman, to maybe shed some light on this. Dr. Rick, always good to visit with you. It's been too long. How are you?
I'm good, Dan. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. Just your general thoughts on what's happening. Because I want this visit to be about sports, too, but maybe about the medical community and also just some general practices that people can use in their everyday lives. So let's shed some light on this. Just a general thought on what's happening from a medical person's perspective.
Well, from a medical perspective, this is unprecedented. So we've never had a situation where there's been so much going on in terms of people being so sick and then just absolutely no care for the average person, right? So if you have coronavirus, there's a lack of medical supplies, lack of medical resources. But if you're just the average person and you hurt your knee, you hurt your shoulder, you have just ABC medical problems, all of the elective surgeries are basically on hold and medical services are on hold. So it's really a trying time because for people that are real sick, you know, they're in the hospital, but if you tear your ACL tomorrow, there's no way you're going to get surgery. There's no way you're going to get looked after. So again, very, very trying time, something we've never seen before.
I'm assuming you're seeing that in the field that you're in, which is ACLs and knee surgeries, elbow surgeries, Tommy John surgeries, all those kind of things. Are you seeing that have an impact on sports in that regard?
Absolutely. And, you know, that hasn't changed. People are still coming in with these problems. Now, they're not out playing competitive sports right now, but people that were injured four weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, pitchers, shoulders, you know, they're coming in and basically still injured, still need to get care, and we're unable to provide that care.
How about what happened then with Noah Syndergaard and people see that and he gets the Tommy John surgery? I'm assuming that has kind of, you know, shook the sports world a little bit in your community.
Well, we got backlash. The Mets got backlash. Everybody got backlash. Social media has been very unkind to the sports community in general. And you can understand that somebody saying, look, people are dying. You need the resources. And now you operate on somebody who's a professional pitcher just because he's a professional pitcher. And you can really understand both sides of the coin. Obviously, the Mets want him back. They're paying him a lot of money. And people are saying, why didn't you take those resources and treat somebody who was going to die? So, again, you can see both sides of the coin. But I got 5-6 kids in my practice right now, scholarship athletes, need surgery and weren't able to do the surgery. So just think, you have a son or a daughter. They got a scholarship to play football at Ohio State. They tore their ACL. We've been rehabbing them, getting ready for the surgery, and all of a sudden surgeries are put on hold, and boom, you know, your athlete can't progress to do what he needs to do, which is to play football and train to play football.
Are you seeing the injuries drop right now just because there's not competitive sports, or are people, for lack of a better term, still getting hurt because they're in training?
Well, you know, I think we're going to see the injury numbers drop going forward. Right now we're treating all the people that were injured that we've not really been able to appropriately take care of, can't have their surgeries yet. So those people we're still treating. And I think because there's no competitive sports going on immediately, those numbers will drop in the future. But there's going to be such a backlog to try to catch up. I don't know that we're going to feel that effect.
In terms of when we do return to sports, I'll be fascinated to see if injuries pop and spike because the fact is that maybe we rush guys back. Do you think that's a concern right now in the medical field with sports?
I think it's a huge concern, especially in track and field and some of the other sports. So you can imagine if you were to start playing hockey right now, you have to go almost through training camp again. The guys haven't played, et cetera. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're on the ice. So I think you're going to see a lot of sports when they come back not have the appropriate time to get ready, especially if they start if they do 1 or 2 weeks of spring training and then boom, try to play baseball. You can imagine what would happen. That's your field. But I see a lot of people coming back too early, or people just saying, look, I can go play golf. I'm just going to go jump on the golf course and not do any of the appropriate stretching, not getting ready, et cetera. And I'm talking about a high level, PGA level. And I worry about that. I think you're going to see a lot of soft tissue injuries, a lot of ligament injuries, because people are just going to rush back.
In terms of, for a, just a general question here, the coronavirus, explain in layman's terms what this virus is and what it does to a human being.
Well, it's 8 strains, and the virus runs the gamut. So on one hand, you could have the virus, be totally asymptomatic, be perfect, never know you have it, nothing happens. Now, it's the only virus that we've seen as a medical community that can go right to your lungs and in 3 days kill you. You know, if you have the flu, you feel bad, you can't breathe, you're coughing, you're sneezing, it's not going to kill you. It might take a week, might take 10 days, but you're going to get better. The people that crash and burn on the coronavirus go from having trouble breathing to going on a ventilator to dying, and that can happen literally in 72 hours. Now, if your underlying health is good, you're probably going to get through this pretty easy. You may have trouble breathing, you may cough, you may feel bad, but you're going to get better. If your underlying health is bad, you're a smoker, you have asthma, you're on any kind of severe medications, then you have a real risk of not making it through this. And we've never, in 34 years I've been doing this, had a virus that was so A, contagious, spreads like wildfire, and B, so virulent where, yes, in a short time, this virus could literally kill you.
Have you seen the social guidelines help in what you're seeing with social distancing, people being at home? Do you think it's making that much of a difference?
You know, that's a good question. And the question is, in the community, what is the social distancing? So if you live in New York and you're on a subway, there's no real social distancing. So your ability to social distance in a highly congested city, New York, Chicago, L.A., are very limited. And in an area like rural Missouri, where you social distance because, you know, your neighbor's 6 miles away on the next farm, you're going to social distance because you don't really have any choice. So the real question is staying inside really making a difference, or is it really just the metric of where you live and how dense the population is? And based on that, I would say, you know, in St. Louis, you should social distance if you can. But even with all that happening, we're seeing a huge increase in the virus. We had the third person die today of the virus in St. Louis County. I think we're going to see those numbers go up. So I'm not sold that the answer is social distancing as much as trying to understand what a virus does. And what the virus is going to do is it's going to infect a certain amount of people. Those people are going to have immunity. Those people are going to relay that immunity to others, and we're going to get past this pretty much as the weather changes and viruses die out, the natural history of the virus. So again, I'm not 100% sold that the social distancing in and of itself is going to solve this problem. I think it mutes how many people are going to get the disease, but a lot of people are still going to get the disease.
You've said something there that caught my attention, the weather. If it gets hot, are you seeing tests or places in the world that are hot that aren't being affected like other places that we see now in the United States?
Oh, without a doubt. So look at the numbers in India, which is, you know, brutally hot. And look at the numbers in some of the Mideastern countries. We're not seeing Singapore. And even though they have a pretty significant contagion because they're pretty close to other populations, Hong Kong, et cetera, they're not seeing the big numbers. And the reason is their temperature is so bad. You know, who gets the flu in the summer? Nobody. So, you know, in hot, hot climates, the virus is going to do poorly, which viruses do poorly in hot, hot climates.
So we got to hope for a hot, steamy summer in St. Louis. Might be uncomfortable, but that's what we want.
The nastier the 100%, the nastier the summer, the more humid, the heat index going up is going to kill the virus. And if we have a mild summer, that's going to be terrible.
If somebody goes to the grocery store, is wearing a mask beneficial? I've read yes. I've read no. What do you think?
I think number one, if you're truly doing what you should be doing and you're socially distancing at 6 feet, 8 feet, 10 feet, wearing a mask isn't going to matter. If you're going to interact with people, since you have no idea who the carriers are of this virus, then I would say wear a mask. So if you truly can stay away from everybody, rock and roll, you're good. But if you think you're going to interact with people, you're going to be close, you're going to be in an environment that you can't help but being a foot or two away, please put on a mask.
It's speculation at this point, but you're in the sports community. When you talk to other doctors, other surgeons, what is the general feeling about when sports come back? And if it does, how it looks? What do you hear from your counterparts?
Well, I think you got two things going on. Number one, let's say I were to tell everybody in a month they could come back and they could go get in the locker room and they could go to Busch Stadium and sit right next to people they didn't know. How many people do you think are really going to do that? Everyone's going to have a little hangover from this, and they're going to say, you know, I'm not 100% sold that I'm ready to go to Busch Stadium. So even when this whole thing clears, which is going to be about 4 or 6 weeks, in my opinion, then you're still going to have a lot of people that are going to be a little bit nervous about getting in a room or an elevator or in small spaces with people that they don't know. They don't know if they're sick. They don't know if they're carriers, et cetera. And the other concern is the virus coming back next winter or late fall next winter. So that's always going to be on people's mind because you're going to start seeing that in the media pretty heavily coming up. And so based on that, I think sports are going to look a lot different. I think your numbers are going to be way down. And the question to ask, and I know my Olympic athletes are texting me and calling me and saying, I'm not going to Tokyo. I don't care if it's a year away. I'm not going to Tokyo. So I think you're going to have a lot of athletes that getting into that locker room mentality where everybody's mingling, media's coming in and out, and media have already been kind of moved away a little bit, but still right next to other athletes that you don't know if they're sick or not. I think you're going to see a lot of social change based on this.
This is Cardinals broadcaster and Schnucks shopper Dan McLaughlin. Schnucks would like to thank everyone during this difficult time. That includes those that are working in the stores. As you can imagine, during this time, Schnucks employees are putting in long hours around the clock to best serve our community. So the next time you're in Schnucks, tell them thanks and that you appreciate them. Let them know how much we appreciate their efforts, because we will all get through this together.
Luke Hughes, we are St. Louis.
Dan McLaughlin here to tell you about the hometown automotive family I trust the most, the Luke Hughes Automotive Network, and you know they are St. Louis. Luke Hughes has been a part of St. Louis for over 7 decades. They're proud to support St. Louis and the surrounding areas with cars, youth, sports, and charitable efforts. 14 brands, 10 locations. Just visit Fuse.com to start shopping today.
Lou Fuse, we are St. Louis.
The virus, you caught my attention with something I wanted to address, which is, can it come back? Will it come back? So we have a hot summer. All of a sudden, now we get into the cold and flu season. What do you potentially see if there's no vaccine with this type of virus?
Well, that's the kicker right there. So if there's no vaccine, you're going to get another spike in the virus. Now, hopefully, you're going to have a significant amount of immunity among significant amount of people. You know, if clearly 50% of the population gets the virus at some level, even though a lot of people aren't going to get sick, it is going to spread significant immunity among those people. Then what's going to happen is the virus is going to spike again, but it's only going to affect a significantly less number of people, right? Because a lot of the people with the immunity aren't going to get sick again. The virus can come back at a lower level. About 3% of people we're seeing test positive again, but most people don't test positive again. And when it spikes again, we expect the spike to be much less.
What are you hearing from folks that maybe aren't in the sports community, but yet they are doctors, they're nurses, they're the folks that are surgeons and trying to help people on the front lines? What are you hearing from the medical community about what's going on?
Well, first of all, the things that I hear in the medical community are everybody's scared. The doctors are scared for their patients. And everyone's hearing horror stories, you know, young kids getting it. Someone just died who was 12 years old, et cetera. So you're hearing people say, well, we've never seen anything like this. We've never seen a disease that was just so fast, so virulent. But the other thing I'm hearing, which I'm hearing more of, is the doctors being scared to death. I had a resident call me who kind of circled through here and spent some time here with us, who's doing a rotation at NYU up in New York. And he's like, you know, I just don't even want to go to work. I'm scared I'm going to get the virus. We don't have protective gear, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you have a medical community that's flipped out a little bit because I think they're scared personally of interacting with some of these people.
We have some of the smartest people, brilliant minds in the world, working 24/7 to try to find a vaccine or a pharmaceutical cocktail, if you will, to try to fight this virus. And I know this is a very tough question, but just in your professional opinion, how long do you think that would take to find something like this and speed up the process to make sure that we get it available to the public?
I think you're probably looking at spring either late winter or spring of 21. You know, I think people are working on it very hard. The problem is you have to test it. You don't want to give the virus to 10 million people and have 5 million people die of coronavirus, which is the fear with any vaccine. So I think you're going to have testing that's probably going to go on for 4 to 6 months. So if they start the testing probably August, September, probably early, mid-winter would be the earliest, and early spring would be probably the latest.
Doc, how are you holding up with all your friends in the medical community?
Well, you know, we talk to each other, and team docs are all buddies. And, you know, I think everybody is in a little bit disbelief. It's almost like the Twilight Zone, and I think doctors are the same. And then the other thing is, you know, when are orthopedic surgeons like myself going to get called to the front lines and start treating people? So if it gets bad enough, virtually every doctor is going to be a coronavirus doctor. They're just going to need the manpower.
It's incredible. What would be your, I'll wrap it up with this. What's your advice for the general public and those that listen to this? What would you tell them from those that you speak to, your medical opinion on what to do to try to help everyone and themselves and make sure they don't contract the virus?
Well, I think a few things. Number one, I think try to stay fit, right? You're indoors, you're self-quarantined. Try to stay fit. Try to limit what you're eating. Try to get outside your backyard or go on the internet and get some exercise programs and really try to work out every day, even if it's only for 15 or 20 minutes, number one. Number two, if you're going to go out in public, get a mask, get an N95 mask, wear some gloves. Yeah, you're going to look a little geeky. Don't worry about it.
So what?
And, you know, your friends are going to think you're weird. It'll be all right. But, you know, try to keep your distance, wash your hands. And for me, I think everybody should be taking zinc. I think everybody out there should go to Walgreens, CVS, wherever, and buy, whether it's lozenges, liquid, doesn't matter, whatever's left, buy Amazon, buy some zinc. You want to take it twice a day. I think that's going to help everybody's immunity. And colloidal silver. I would tell everybody to start drinking a little bit of colloidal silver. Again, you can get it anywhere. You take about a cc of it, you take it twice a day, and that's going to help your immunity.
In terms of the masks, if you're not a medical doctor, where could you find those? Because all we're hearing is that there's a shortage on these. So do you have any advice in that regard?
Yeah, you know, I think the best thing to do, and it's going to sound awful, but I go to Lowe's or Home Depot, and I get some of those paint masks that you see painters wear, and they're N95 plus. They look a little odd, but they're very, very effective. They're much better than the medical masks that we're wearing. And they last forever. Once you get one, you never need to buy them again. And that's probably what I would do.
Rick, you're the best. Great to talk to you, Doc. Stay healthy, stay safe, and best to you and your family. Thanks so much.
The same. If you ever need it, just call me.
You got it, buddy.
Take care.